Mr. Grumley.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This case is really about a single issue. That doesn't make the case simple, like many cases that come to this court and other appellate courts from the ASPCA. It travels, as other courts have opined, a Byzantine path. And this has done the same. But the single issue I believe that this court must decide is whether or not the federal government must file a claim and or have that claim resolved and be part of a contracting officer's final opinion in a matter. In the instant case, T&W Edmire Corp. Undertook a lengthy and difficult project for the federal government. It took approximately 6 years to conclude. At the end of those 6 years, a year later in 1997, it filed a claim for money as it felt due it. Some 3 years later, the contracting officer in 2001 filed its opinion. The difficult factual situation is really what happened after the opinion was filed by the by the contracting officer in the appeal taken by Edmire to the ASPCA. What happened is that two additional contract modifications were awarded Edmire. While this was referred to in the decision of the contracting officer, it was not a matter of particular moment when the appeal was filed. When the appeal was filed before the ASPCA in May of 2001, the modifications and the payments came later.
Now, that appeal was from this $3 million-plus determination by the, the contracting officer, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so the government appealed that?
No.
Who appealed it?
Edmire appealed it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The government can't appeal that.
He appealed it because he didn't think it was enough.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
The trick bag, as it were, in this type of litigation is that the government can't appeal. Only the contractor can appeal.
Okay, so the contractor appeals, and then the appeal results in a lesser amount.
That's correct. And what the appellant is saying here is that you can't have jurisdiction in the federal courts in an ASBCA 41 U.S.C. 605A matter unless the contracting officer made a decision regarding that claim. In this situation, Your Honor, no contracting officer ever made a decision regarding the claim of the government. In fact, no claim of the government was ever made before the ASBCA. So Edmire, in effect, walks into its trial or hearing before the ASBCA having no notice, either by the contracting officer's final opinion or by a claim made in that proceeding by the government, that the government was seeking any refund whatsoever.
The statute doesn't have that provision, though, does it, that there has to be a claim by the government before a contracting officer, before anything can eventuate?
Judge, what 605
doesn't say that.
What 605B says is that the ASBCA, the Government Claims Act, has jurisdiction over those matters determined by a contracting officer's final opinion. And in the situation that brings us to this courtroom, that didn't happen. There was never a decision on a government claim for recoupment made by a contracting officer. Could there have been? Yes. The government could have gone to the contracting officer and said, amend your opinion. We believe this money should be repaid to us. The government could have gone to the ASBCA at the time there was a hearing and made a claim against Edmire. It didn't do either of those. In all the cases cited by the government, some claim was made by the government against the contractor.
Counsel, let me come back to Judge Cudahy's question. You have consistently referred to this as a jurisdictional requirement.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I don't understand what's jurisdictional about it. There are two sources of subject matter jurisdiction. 28 U.S.C. 1331 provides jurisdiction of all federal questions, and 1345 adds, although it's surplus, jurisdiction of all suits by the United States.
Correct.
So what jurisdictional problem could there be?
Because, Your Honor, this little notch of litigation against the government regarding government contracts, in particular ASBCA type or court of claims type results where contractors and the government are fighting, has been, I believe, directed by Congress to go to either the ASBCA or the court of claims. And the gatekeeper for both of those avenues is a final decision made by the contracting officer. That's why we say it's jurisdictional.
But I still don't understand why you think that's jurisdictional. It doesn't have anything to do with the adjudicatory competence of the federal court, although it may be that if the government has failed to exhaust its administrative remedies, it should lose. But there's a very large set of cases where a party is going to lose, but the court still has jurisdiction. Now, does anything here turn, by the way, on your characterization of this as jurisdictional?
Yes. To be quite frank, I don't think the argument that we're making to this court was made to the ASBCA during that hearing. That's because the then counsel for Edmire and Edmire had no idea that some recoupment was being sought at that time. I can see why they didn't bring it up. No claim was made against them. The contracting officer didn't find such in his opinion. For Edmire, it was not an issue on the table. I don't believe it was an issue on the table when it went to the Federal Circuit after that decision. I believe the first time the issue of jurisdiction arose in this case was when we made the motion to dismiss in front of Judge Leinenweber. Lisa, does it have some importance? Yes, because like everybody else in this room, I think the issue of federal jurisdiction can be addressed at any time.
What did you expect, what did Edmire expect to get when it appealed the $3 million plus? Expected to get more, I assume.
Yes, he did, Your Honor. I did not handle that appeal. Okay.
But suppose it got $5 million. Is there any appeal beyond that for the government?
I'm sorry.
Or do they have to go back to a contract? You seem to think that whatever the ASBCA did wouldn't be valid because wasn't a contracting officer that made that decision.
I believe I understand the court's opinion. Had the Federal Circuit said, we agree with you, Mr. Redmire, you should get $10 million, I believe what they would have done was referred it back to the ASBCA or a federal officer to respond to that.
Okay, so that, it wouldn't have made a decision, they would have remanded it.
Yeah, I believe so, Your Honor.
That's what you think should have happened.
Yes.
It looks like it's just a collection at this point.
Well, at this point, the government views it as merely a collection activity. And as it characterizes in its brief, the dispute between the parties, the deal was for Edmire to dig the hole, the deal was for us to pay for it, and it didn't like how much we were going to pay for it. I believe it's vastly more complicated than that. The fact in this situation that's in front of the court, Edmire had no notice at any time until it was possibly in the federal circuit that the government was seeking a recovery of funds. Didn't have any notice of that because it certainly wasn't in the contracting officer's opinion, and it certainly wasn't a claim made before the ASBA, and it certainly wasn't a matter that was litigated in that forum. And I believe the purpose of that forum is to litigate all claims between the contractor and the government that arise. That didn't happen. And for the government agrees that the gatekeeper to the ASBCA and the federal courts is the final decision of the contracting officer. We have no disagreement about that. What the government is saying here is that this doesn't relate to the contract. The fact that Edmire thinks it should have gotten A and B and we believe it doesn't relate to the contract at all. It's like the case that they cite to that says it was merely a decimal point error. we intended to give, you know, he should have gotten $40,000, and the clerk in the government office gave him $400,000. It's just a ministerial event. It's not a ministerial event. It goes right to the heart of the contract.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel for DNW. Your Honor, the United States did not skip a necessary step when it filed its suit before the district court and asked for a judgment against Edmire for the overpayment that it made in this case. I want to make two important points here. First of all, the contract issues in this case that are and were subject to the Contract Disputes Act were fully litigated. The second point I'd like to make is that the government's overpayment claim in this case is not related to the contract in the sense that it's subject to the Contract Disputes Act. As to the first point, I want you, the court to be very clear about how the government's overpayment claim occurred in this case. T&W Edmire dug a hole out in Deerfield. It was a reservoir. After that contract was completed, Edmire did not feel that it was paid enough. It made a claim to a contracting officer. Edmire believed it was entitled to $33 million more. In the end, that contracting officer decided that Edmire was only entitled to $3.4 million more. At that juncture, and something that Edmire has never wanted to concede, neither in the district court or today before you, is that at the point the contracting officer awarded Edmire $3.4 million, the Army Corps of Engineers paid that money. The Army Corps of Engineers paid that money in 2001. Edmire still was not satisfied, obviously. They had made a claim for $33 million. They only got paid $3.4 million by the Army Corps. At that juncture, Edmire decided to appeal the contracting officer's decision to the Armed Services Board of Contract Appeals. Now, this is a very critical stage in the litigation, because at that point in time, Edmire should have known that the board was empowered, first of all, to conduct a de novo hearing on Edmire's overpayment claim, or rather on their extras claim, and secondly, that the board was empowered to either increase that claim or to decrease that claim. So when it filed suit before the board, Edmire basically rolled the dice that the board would award an amount in excess of $3.4 million. We wouldn't be here today, though, if the board had done that. In fact, what the board did is that they did indeed lower Edmire's extras claim. They lowered it from $3.4 million to $1.6 million, and that's what created the overpayment claim in this case. That extras claim was litigated all the way up to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. Edmire had made some attempts to seek a writ before the Supreme Court, but that effort fell through, and in early 2005, when it became apparent that they would not appeal that case to the Supreme Court, the United States filed its claim in the district court. Now, what's important to recall and remember there, too, is that in the district court, there was no issue of either contract interpretation and that contract between Edmire and the United States, and there was no issue about performance. As far as contract interpretation is concerned, the contract wasn't even a part of the record below. And so far as contract performance is concerned, the Judge Leinaweber relied exclusively on the board's decision in this case, which was a part of the record. So the Judge Leinaweber neither made any contract interpretation calls in this case, nor did he make any calls in terms of whether Edmire's performance in this case was adequate or inadequate. The judge relied exclusively on the board's decision. The cases, we cited them in our brief, that discuss whether a claim is related. Let me back up for a moment. First of all, it was correctly pointed out that the district court in this case has subject matter jurisdiction of all claims made by the United States under Section 1345. The Contract Dispute Act is a cutout from that. If a claim is subject to the Contract Dispute Act, then the district court does not have jurisdiction over it. The Contract Disputes Act says that that the Court of Claims has jurisdiction over contract actions where the action or the claim relates to the contract. And the two measures that the courts have used to determine whether a claim relates to a contract is whether that claim involves contract interpretation or whether the claim involves contract performance. And there's a number of cases cited in our brief that stand for that proposition. But by the time that our suit was filed in the district court, all the contract issues had been fully adjudicated through the hearing officer, the board decision in 2003, and through the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit in 2004. All the contract issues had been decided, namely the value of Ed Meyer's contract extras claim. And again, I must emphasize that the district court was called upon to make not one single decision as far as a contract issue is concerned. The only issue that was placed before the district court was what was the value of the extras claim, and it relied again exclusively on the board's decision. And the extras claim was by the board's decision was worth $1.8 million. The second fact was how much did the government pay on that claim? The government, it was conceded, paid $3.4 million. You put those two facts together, and it shows that the government overpaid by $1.8 million, and that's simply all the district court was asked to decide in this case. So unless there's any further questions, Your Honor, I would just ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Your time has expired, Mr. Gremley. Our next case for argument this morning is...